please. Let me just talk briefly about schedules for information purposes. We have announced 3614 and HJR 100 for every day between now and Tuesday. I expect to do House Bill 3614 today and get it to Ways and Means, and I expect to do HJR 100 tomorrow to move it to the floor. But the last day we can do it is on Tuesday under the House rules, so I just wanted to make sure that it was on the agenda in case a glitch comes up in either of those cases, so that we've announced that I meet for the House committee agenda. The expectation is that will not be the case. We are planning, if we pass 3614 today and HGR 100 tomorrow, on Monday, what we'll have left is an informational meeting that Vice Chair Richardson will be chairing with a visitor who will be in the building that day from Heritage Healthcare. Is that right?
Heritage Foundation.
Heritage Foundation. Remember his name?
Yes, his name's Ed Hazelmeyer, and he's their head analyst and traveled all over the country consulting with different states about using the exchange and how to provide a balance between free enterprise and other sources of getting universal access to healthcare.
And I guess I want to publicly say, if we pass the bills, and this is on the agenda on Monday, which is already on the announced agenda for Monday, I'm not going to be here, but it's not because of the not wanting to be here. I have a prior commitment that I'll have to break if we have to do work, but I prefer not to. And I really do appreciate Vice President, Vice Chair.
McCain Richardson.
I was told I can't announce the Greenleg Bruin ticket for president during a meeting, so we're holding back on that.
I'm trying to get Mitt's endorsement of it.
No, I'm waiting for Stephen Colbert's endorsement. That's a different question. So that will be in Monday's agenda, and my guess is, unless we have something over from the Senate or can arrange an informational meeting for Tuesday, that we probably won't have a meeting on Tuesday. But okay. So let's move into a work session on... are we supposed to have a public hearing today?
We can post it that way.
Okay, let's move into a work session on HB 3614 and tell you we have some new information from DHS. I don't know if we need to bring them up. We can distribute it without.
Okay. Sir, it isn't. I emailed it to the committee members, but it was shortly after lunch. But there is hard copies in your packet of some more options. There are the charts that have the DHS sent that have the option one with the July 1, 2008 implementation, which is your first stapled two pages. You have a chart and a graph for preference.
On the population estimates.
Correct.
The caseload estimates.
The caseload estimates. Then the second stapled one is with an option two implementation date of October 1, 2008. And then the stapled two page at the very end is with a January 1, 2009 implementation date. And they are here to provide the committee with any information, sir.
So the estimate is that we'll add about 20,000 kids rather than 18,000. As we read this, and if somebody would like to talk about that, we'll ask DHS folks. We also have a cleaner fiscal estimate from DHS with the, if you would pass that out, that simply takes the other estimates we had for caseload impact as was, but moves the $1 million request for the demonstrations into the 2709 fiscal impact, which seemed from our discussions the other way the best way to give it to Ways and Means. Although, again, I do want to make sure you understand these data come to us from DHS, and they'll go to legislative fiscal, what comes out of legislative fiscal is sometimes a mystery. Sometimes the relationship between what goes in and what comes out is a mystery. So Ways and Means may have in front of them when they get this bill a different fiscal analysis. I hope it won't be too different, but there isn't any way to tell. Are there any questions on these? Do we want DHS? These are, as I say, the same fiscal we had before. It was split 400 and 600,000 across two different time periods, and now it rationally moves it back into the 07-09.
Could I have Judy come up?
Absolutely.
Judy, I have a question for you on your charts.
And who else did I see down here? Representative Cannon?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, for the record, my name is Judy Moore Peterson. I'm the Deputy Administrator for Finance Policy and Analysis with the Department of Human Services.
And our favorite number cruncher on that. Thank you. Thank you for preparing the charts. I just want to clarify. So I'm looking at option 3, the chart you prepared showing the caseload increase, and I really appreciate the souped-up graph with all the little descriptors. That's very helpful. So when I do the math, I just want to make sure I'm doing this right. I'm at December 10, 2010.
So you're looking at the table?
The table, the very last box. With the 12-month enrollment, the children amount is 103,623.
Right.
At 6 months, it would be 84,630. When I do the difference of that, that difference doesn't match the caseload number that's on option 3 in the fiscal. And my assumption is because not only will we increase approximately 14,000 with the 12-month, you're also counting in general caseload increase. Would that be an accurate assessment? Because this is about 18,000 in the difference. It's about 14,000 in the fiscal for this change. Is that why there's a difference? No. Okay.
So
the average of 14.
Yeah. Chair, Representative Kotek, if you look at that through the graph, you'll see that it's the average. That's the monthly average, and you have a slight increase over that time period. It's not entirely flat.
Thank you. I just want to make sure, because if we hand out these numbers and someone says, well, this one. Okay, thank you. That's very helpful.
Although there is a slight natural increase if you look at the graph as well, is that right?
Yes.
There will be, natural increase. Okay.
Yes, but that's already factored into the base. It wouldn't have been attributed to the change of this policy effect.
Great. Gotcha. Thank you.
And a little confusion just for help. If you want to see the baseline against which, the last one I saw, the baseline of January 09 is the same baseline for all three of them, although it's in a different place in the chart, right?
Right.
I mean, that's at 83,686.
Correct. Because the forecast wouldn't have changed. The base remains the same against what you're measuring.
Yeah, so it's January 09 is the baseline of the increase in all three charts. It's just that it's a different place in each of the three charts.
Right.
Thank you.
Representative Cannon? Representative Kotek asked the exact question that I was planning to ask, only in a much more articulate fashion.
you're free to ask it again, and we can get it answered again. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, now the next thing is to sort out the amendments we have in front of us. Sandy, will you guide us through the amendment question? We have some left over from yesterday.
Yes, right? Mr. Chair, we do.
Did we adopt anything yesterday?
Yes, we did, Mr. Chair. The committee took action on the -4s. And the -7.
Okay.
The -4s, as you'll recall, inserted the $1 million amount on page 3 in the blank that's in the original bill. The -7s added the federal definition of poverty-level medical children. We did discuss and learned that the amendments dealing with Section 1 on page 1 were a bit problematic. So what you have before you are the -9s that I am hoping reflects the committee's discussion in its final form.
And the -9s replace
the
-1s and the -2s, right? Is that right?
So there's one.
You could still have dash one.
The one.
Dash one deletes the whole.
The
dash one deletes all of section one.
All of section right. one. And right. dash two
is
deletes.
A, was a bad dash two.
Okay.
It was totally wrong.
Okay, so dash two we don't even want to consider.
Right.
So dash nine, though, replaces dash one and what we were trying to do in dash three.
Correct, sir. Correct.
Okay, and it does it. Representative Kotek, do you want to talk about the dash nines, please?
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So dash nine is the attempt to retain from section one just the very first part that instructs the department to adopt procedures to streamline and simplify. I also ask them to consult folks who work with populations that would have access to these forms and procedures. And you'll see in the dash nines a very creative section nine that's been added to address what we were talking about, including this section within and having the department do this within existing resources or available resources. And so what Legislative Council did is they don't really use that language of existing resources. So essentially what this says is Section 1 will be applicable only to the dollars that are allocated to the department beginning of this biennium. That's their way of saying existing available resources.
Oh, you're going the wrong way, Patty.
No.
Actually, can we see you up here for a moment?
I was going to try to get a dash 9.
Okay.
So though it's a bit convoluted. Essentially, they can't bind the next legislature for the next biennium, but what they're saying is, department, go ahead and do this. You've got some money that we told you you have for this biennium, and then we can go where this goes eventually. If we needed to change in the next biennium, I suppose we'd have to. But.
And the point of the reason that I would like you up here is that I want to make sure that you still think from the department's perspective. If we leave this component of Section 1 in this form, it will not at least cause you to tell LFO there is an increased fiscal.
For the record, my name is Patricia O'Sullivan. Almost forgot. I'm the Director of Public Policy for the Department of Human Services. Chair Green, look, you can pick apart legislative language all day long, and I do that all day long. So this isn't exactly what I would like to see. I think it does the trick. I don't think that it... I think it's too directive in that it says we shall do something, and then it says we shall implement the provisions using money made available during this biennia and other biennia, which almost looks like we're doing something new... I know what the expectations are, but when you put it into the law books, it goes forever until we take it out. I think we're very clear about legislative intent, and I think it's okay. I would have done it a little different, but I don't work in legislative council, so.
Well, basically, what I think we did was take the existing Form 1 and modify it with. Using existing resources, but it's not exactly what we intended. I think what the intention was to say, if you had money available,
right,
not that you should do it out of this year's budget.
Then there is a difference, and that's where I have a little bit of discomfort. Although I understand what the intent of the committee is, I understand what the intent of Representative Kotek and Ms. Freeman are. I'm just not sure it really says that, but I think we can live with it.
Chair?
Yeah.
I would like to just say to our committee that there's a possibility of just changing one word by interlineation, which would take the pressure off of DHS, and instead of saying shall adopt policies, it'd be shall consider policies, and in subsection 9, instead of shall implement the provisions, shall consider the provisions, because the goal is to let them know this is what we'd like them to do without directing it, so make it so directive that they have to, somebody else reading it says, hey, you've got to enforce. So I'm thinking that one word would make it less directive, but still let them know that where we're trying to go with this.
Why wasn't the LC willing to do what we asked, which would be to say to do this if resources
were available?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, when I talked to LC last night after the meeting, that is not a foreman style that LC is supporting using. It is really discouraged. We then talked about what type of language they were going to go back and put their heads together and try and come up with some language that made it directive. But they are not putting in language that within available resources or using existing resources, basically because it's not binding.
Yeah, but that's the problem. The problem is this says they have to do it, and they have to do it within the existing budget. It doesn't say they should do it if they have the resource. I mean, this isn't, there's nothing optional here, which is what you just said.
Chair Greenlee, because they weren't supporting that type of language, and they were going to present something else, and that's what we.
And you've actually just talked me out of being comfortable with this at all. I was trying to be nice, but it just wasn't working.
Well, I mean, but you could say that now and really mean it, and it still could get the LFO.
Exactly.
And trigger something else, because it says that you have to do this. Mm-hmm. And their question would be, what aren't you going to do if this is what you have to do?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, is there a point at which our committee or any legislator in requesting drafting of a bill could respectfully receive that guidance from legislative counsel about the form and practice, but the legislative body by vote might choose to put something into law as lawmakers?
Yes, yeah. Is the answer, but they're our counsel, and I think it's wise if you listen to what your lawyers tell you. I think what there's, I don't know, I mean, it would be nice to maybe have them here.
I actually think Representative Richardson's suggestions were good ones. If we only have to consider it, then whatever we do consider, and we do, we will do within existing resources, which is, you know, what we're doing now. The second part of the first paragraph, you are directing us to consult with other people, and that's fine. That's okay.
So, Mr. Chair, and I guess Representative Richardson, do you suggest if we change adopt to consider in Section 1 that we don't need the Section 9 then?
Well,
is the consider instead of the shall within available resources, or is it in addition to?
Well, let me hand over the gavel and speak as a committee member in this discussion we're having this week. DHS has told us they're going to do this anyway. And I'm not sure what we gain by putting this into a bill. And I really would speak in favor of going with dash one, which simply takes all of Section 1 out. I know, and I think we ought to discuss that. I know that makes you very unhappy. And that's why I gave up the gavel. Let's discuss these as two options, because I think this gives, I just think whatever we're going to do here is going to end up being dangerous in terms of the potential ability to get the bill through Ways and Means, which is, this isn't a problem getting votes in either house. It's a matter of getting it through Ways and Means, and that's... Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I don't know about very unhappy, but, you know, we're taking out all the sections around outreach, and the history of that department has not always been as good as it is now in terms of actually trying to simplify, trying to engage the people who should be giving them advice. I would be fine with shall consider. I think we'd have to decide whether we need the additional budget piece, but I think the shall consider will get us there. I think it's an important intent to have in statute.
No.
Representative Gessler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairs. I guess I don't understand if we change adopt to consider, if what we've heard from legislative counsel is that we can't do something that's passive and non-binding, whether or not we wouldn't end up with the same pushback from counsel, again, if it's a different word to affect the same
actually
outcome.
We are, because we're leaving shall in there, and we are directing them that they shall consider. It's just that we're not requiring them to adopt, and so that's... So I think we're complying with their form requirement, but being less dictatorial about it. That's the suggestion.
My question is, and concern is, are we being too passive?
I mean, we're saying that we're saying we don't want to. We're saying we can't. You can't do this with the. Make sure I phrase this right. We don't want to say you have to do it with your current resources, which is basically what the Dash 9, I think, is saying. You have to do this with your current resources. What we want to say is, but we don't want to say you can do this with your current resources. I think we want to say you have to do it if you have the ability within the current resources. Hopefully I'm making that distinction.
Oh, I understand. Let's see what Representative Kotek's position is. You suggested.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That would be preferable, because I think that's what we want them to do. I just don't know how we wordsmith that. But we don't need to decide on this today, but...
Well, it's interesting because I agree with Representative Kotek that the language that a philosophical directive should be in this piece. So I would prefer that the language stay in as opposed to adopting the dash ones, the directive to the department. I like your idea of saying shall consider rather than shall adopt in Section 1, and I like the idea shall consider the provisions of Section 1, because it does go on to say using the monies made available to the department in that current budget cycle. So I think that it gets there that way, and Representative Berlin, if that's contrary to what you said, I guess I wasn't quite tracking with you. But that's, I agree that if we could do that with within the parameters of this committee with a change by interlineation, I would be fine with that.
There's agreement.
Thank you. We have testimony that not only they are considering it, they've considered it and they're moving these things
and
forward.
Doing.
And I think having something soft like shall consider, I don't know what the standing of that is. I mean, I don't know what how they would report that they have considered it. Bad.
I don't think it's me.
It just feels easier to take out all of Section 1 and send it forward. But I mean, in this case, and I'd be willing to move Section the Dash 1 so we can have a discussion and vote it up or down. But I suppose we could stand at ease for a moment and get the ledge council up here.
Mr. Chair, if I can get a hold of Lori, and we might be able to get her on conference call.
Okay. We'll stand at ease.
3614, reconvening. We're having a little heartburn over Dash 9 amendment. And as we read the Dash 9 amendment, this requires the department to do it and requires they do it out of existing budget.
Correct.
And we think that's going to cause us a little bit of a problem, even though they say they're going to do it anyway. We were wondering if we amended this to add, Mr. Vice Chair, where's, to add the word consider instead of adopt in line 2.
Okay.
Whether that would be okay with you? In terms of, apparently you had some problem with being wishy-washy.
That's a legal term.
Yeah, that's a term of art, right? And consider might be viewed as being wishy-washy, but it really does reflect our intent, especially since they're already considering it. It gives them some further direction to keep considering it. Eliminating Section 9 entirely from the Dash 9s. Does that?
That can be done.
Is that?
Do I need to identify myself?
Please do.
Okay. Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, this is Lori Freeman from Office of Legislative Counsel. And yes, you could change shall adopt to consider, and you could delete Section 9 entirely in the 3614-9 amendment.
And that makes the part that begins on line 4 of that page, in fact, telling them to do that, and they don't have any problem with telling them. The question about in developing policies, who they should consult with.
Chair Greenlick, that's correct.
All right. I don't suppose you would consider it a conceptual amendment to do that. Huh? I suppose you're going to want to.
This is the close.
Are you meeting tomorrow?
Yes, we are meeting tomorrow. And we can handle it tomorrow with no problem.
Chair Greenlick, I can definitely have that for you for tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you. Then we'll, I think what we'll do is think about adopting, I think we have a couple more to consider before we go, and then ask you to do that. Is that the sense of the committee?
Mm-hmm.
That's a comfortable way to do that? Okay. So what we'd ask you to do is substitute consider for adopt on line 2 and delete lines 8 through 15.
I can do that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Talk to you tomorrow.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Did I hit it?
Yeah.
All right. What other amendments do we have to deal with before to get it for everything but this one?
Mr. Chair, you had.
We did
you
four. Started,
you did just a little bit of review on the dash threes, which are changing the proportion of the four grants to changing the one rural to two rural. And you also have then the implementation amendments, which are the dash fives and the dash sixes.
The date, okay.
Correct, the implementation date.
Let's start with the date first. I think we thought we would prefer the dash sixes. Is that correct? The January 1st, 09 date, is that the sixth?
That are the, yes, sir.
That are. Is that the sense of the committee that we would prefer the dash sixes?
No cost.
Can I have a motion for the dash sixes and we'll discuss it then?
Mr. Chair, I'd move the dash six amendments to House Bill 3614.
So we have a motion on the floor to move to amend 3614 with the dash six amendments. To amend dash 3614 as previously amended, to further amend it with the dash six. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So moved. We have now let's open discussion on whether we want to specify two of the four bills being two of the four projects being rural. These would be the dash three amendments. Although there was some question, Representative Mao would like if we do that to say rural and frontier. You don't have a problem with that. Could we have anybody here from the advocate group that would like to talk with Doug? Would you like to join us and comment on that? My immediate tendency is to feel that we ought to leave room for flexibility rather than actually specify this, but I wonder if you all would have a...
Mr. Chair, may I comment on
that? Oh, please do.
I am in favor of this amendment because I actually think we have a lot of latitude on page 2 of the bill, line 21, where this would go. It says we want to award grants to projects that serve or serves a rural area. I think that's actually fairly broad. We could theoretically get a project that serves an entire county that has maybe a more urban part of the county or a more rural service area. I don't think it gets to the frontier that we had heard some concern about saying frontier, because that's very specific. But I think serving a rural area, my concern is making sure that we are trying to get a sense of how this would work in areas that might not have the resources, that might have other challenges. And I think by designating two of the four grants to make sure we're covering a substantial rural service area, I think is good for us and good for what we're trying to achieve.
Representative Bonamici?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the definition of rural?
Well, there are several definitions of rural, but for health purposes, I think probably the one that talks about rural and underserved, is that the most common one?
Mr. Chair, yes, it's loosely defined. depends on what organization or agency you ask, but I think that we don't have to parse out exactly what rural means without getting to the intent. But I'm interested in what Doug Riggs has to say about this and whether it does create too much of a closed conversation or does it expand it, because I think Representative Kotek's point is very good. Rural Grants Pass or rural Southern Oregon or Josephine County is a little different than, you know, parts of Eastern Oregon that are truly frontier. And so I am interested in what Doug has to say.
So am I. Mr. Chairman, Representative Kotek, Representative Maurer, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Riggs on behalf of the Oregon Primary Care Association. Let me first caveat everything I say by saying that our 126 clinics around the state include clinics in Ontario, Vail, Boardman, Nisswa, Coos Bay, Redmond, Brineville, and soon to be Lapine. So,
and rural Washington County.
Yes, in rural Washington County. And so we have a long-term mission for providing for health needs in both urban and rural areas, although in the past I think people have confused community health centers with simply being in the urban areas, and that's not the case. And I agree 100% that the goal of the bill ought to be to reach out across the state. In fact, as we were in the work group last session and as we've been working in the work groups for the last few weeks, we've been talking about trying to expand the collaborative idea, the concept, the primary care home concept around the state, as kind of seeding that idea. So if Senate Bill 329 or something like that moves forward with a primary care home collaborative type of model, more areas of the state other than just Portland or Wayne County would have these concepts kind of underway. So I agree completely with that. I guess what I'd say is I'd have two concerns with specifically saying that 50% of the grants had to go only to rural areas, or three concerns. Maybe one is I'm not quite sure what the definition of rural is, and I've been in plenty of rural committees and debates on rural issues in the past, and there's a very specific definition in, for instance, transportation policy about what rural constitutes. So I'm a little bit concerned about the definition. The second is that I'm a little bit concerned, although I haven't really thought this through, that it might preclude or make more difficult an application which might link an urban area with a rural area as an attempt to provide services in a rural area that maybe they don't have specialty services, telemedicine, something of that nature. And I can't guarantee you that one of the proposals would include that. But, you know, if it says it has to be rural, maybe then the application would come to the rural area to partner with the urban area. I don't know. And I guess the only other concern I'd have, and I think DHS could probably address this in rulemaking, is that I think we all want to make sure that the grants that are awarded are for the very best proposals. And we already have one set aside for a rural area. I think we'll get more. But I don't want to see a situation where we have, you know, three of the top four are from an urban area, only one is from a rural area, but we have to discard one of those really top-level proposals and go for one that's maybe not quite as good. But I'm not willing to fall on my sword on this issue.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
And I think that, you know, an example might be in Medford, because Medford is an urbanized area, as identified by the federal census. But Medford is a center to some very close rural areas, and it's got the health care, whether it's La Clinica, which is in an urban area but has some things outside the urbanized area, and I don't would not want to preclude them because somebody said, well, it has to be a rural, and their headquarters is in an urban area. And so that's my only hesitancy, is because we start to, I don't know who's going to read these grant proposals and how they're going to read what rural is and what it isn't.
President Cote?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I think if this said predominantly serves a rural area, I think there'd be a problem. But I think a project could very well make a case coming out of Jackson County that they're serving rural areas. And I would like to just put that out as the intent of what I'm thinking. I'm not thinking of only rural and only urban. I actually think the best proposals would be the ones that you're describing, because
that's what we're looking for. And some of those delivery systems do reach into rural areas, and we want to, I think, incentivize people to apply in that regard. So,
Representative Cannon, and we might want to call council again and see whether the language on 21 means a project that exclusively, whether it can be construed as exclusively serves a rural area or one that simply has a rural component. I think because we might have to change both words if we want to achieve it that way, but I'm not sure. Representative Cannon, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would have thought, I guess this is a question, isn't part of the intention of having a set-aside or a carve-out for a rural area to ensure that in the situation that Doug has described, where perhaps the best applicants or the most highly qualified applicants come predominantly from urban areas, that we're nevertheless serving rural ones as well? I mean, given the criteria that are laid out in the bill, my hypothesis would be that an urban setting might fare better under this grant program because it, as an applicant, because it will bring, it perhaps be more likely to bring together this diverse set of stakeholders, lots of community groups, et cetera, which would, I think, so using your reasoning might be, in fact, rationale for expanding the number here from one to two, to ensure that in case three of the top four on those criteria are strictly urban, we're nevertheless not disadvantaging rural areas that might have a harder time meeting the criteria in the bill.
Well, I think if what this is, Mr. Sullivan was pointing out to us that it's not the intent that matters, it's the words that matter. And I think if this were in, if this language was construed to be two grants to projects that were exclusively rural areas, then I think it would be a real problem, and it would make Doug's objection clear. I believe the intent was to give priority to a grant that in fact exclusively served a rural area, so that at least one of the projects needed to be in Ontario or somewhere that was, I mean, that's the way I thought it read. But the question is, how does it read? Not what do any of us think it reads. And I would certainly favor it if it suggested at least two of them are a project that includes service to a rural area. And it could be read that. Let's see, we have, what, two lawyers here? What's the plain language meaning of it? No, you can't be a lawyer.
I'm not a lawyer. but if, you know, since we're coming back with another amendment tomorrow, you know, if saying that, changing this to read a project that includes service to a rural area would be very clear.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kotek, I think that would be a really good solution, because I can almost guarantee you what's going to happen is that the bill passes, the RFPs go out, and people are going to put on their thinking caps and try to think big. This is not going to be a process where we think narrowly. We're going to have one doctor in one small location in one small town. I think this is really going to bring a lot of people together. It's going to bring foundation support. It'll bring federal interest. It'll bring community involvement. And I think we're going to come back in two or three years and discover that this is the type of thing that will happen. It's seeding these creative ideas that will include rural and urban. So I wouldn't be, I think, entirely in support of that kind of a concept.
Okay.
What's your recommendation?
We're going to have a nine. Well, I think we need to be very careful about the wording. I think Doug just hit on the word that two projects that include service or something. We need to make sure that we get the language away right. We have time tomorrow. I really want to do it tomorrow if we can, because it goes to Ways and Means. We really need to get it moving. So if we could give Ledge Council information on what it is we're really trying to do here and see if we can get a very clear dash 11 that will be that does it. I don't think any of us have any problems substantively with the notion that it would be great to have a couple of projects that include rural areas, and I envision most of them. And I can see rural Multnomah County and rural Washington County as being places that actually need help as well, in rural Clackamas County. I mean, there are, but what we want to avoid is four projects that only include the city of Portland, the city of Eugene. Well, it wouldn't be only the city of Eugene, it would be Eugene and Springfield, but that would still be Representative Gelser.
And I'm building on that. I'm just a little concerned that if we go to language that says two that include a rural area, that perhaps we would fail to get to even one that really is a predominantly rural area.
Yep.
And to me, that's one of the attractive things about the bill and the discussions we've had previously is how do we get into these underserved areas. And I would hate to see all of these wind up in Clackamas and Multnomah and Washington County, which mm-hmm. theoretically they could underserve an area including a rural area. So maybe it could be two that serve including one that's in a predominantly rural area.
Something like that.
But I don't want to lose at least one predominantly rural area.
I agree. Is that our intent? And we'll see if we can get the language that we can buy. I sense it is the committee intent to do that, to try and get language that says at least one project that is basically a rural project, and at least one more project that, in addition, that at least serves in part a rural area. I don't know how that language, but maybe Lori can get it. And Representative Kotek, would you help guide? You and Sandy, you and Madam Administrator would help guide that bill so we get something absolutely clear for tomorrow.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to just backtrack just a little bit and revisit the notion of the various definitions of rural. And if we're using the word rural in here without any definition, and there are several definitions in the healthcare context, I don't know if that's going to create some sort of...
Yeah, the complexity of this, for example, came up when in the rural subsidy for malpractice insurance ended up with an Ashland plastic surgeon, which, in fact, if he hadn't had such a big house, it probably wouldn't have been an issue, but he did serve a rural area. That he lived in Ashland, and I think it is.
That's not true. Mr.
His practice was in Ashland, or he didn't live in a rural area.
Ashland is considered an urbanized area.
No, I understand. I understand that, but he,
right.
But he did get a rural subsidy.
That is correct.
So there must have been some basis for that rural subsidy, even though he's living in Ashland.
An alternative would be rural, as defined by the Office of Rural Health.
That's the idea.
Is the best.
Yeah. And if we're going to do that, we might as well put rural or frontier. I suppose it doesn't make it any worse, does it?
No, just rural.
Just rural. Okay.
Just rural.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I will work with our administrator and LC on that.
And get any help you need from members of our committee here. We have opinions on this.
I just want to make sure, is that the agreement then? Predominantly one rural, at least one other that serves a rural area, and then the other two might do that as well, but we
want
to make sure that... Okay.
Yeah. I think that is a minimum of one that's predominantly rural and one that includes, and at least one other that includes rural service. Okay.
Just one more thing, Mr. Chair. The rural health section doesn't define rural. It defines rural hospital.
I'm not sure where it is, but in the malpractice, rural malpractice, we discussed this at length and actually came up with a new definition.
Yeah, I think there are different definitions in different pieces of statute.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, if I may, members of the committee, I believe that the definition of rural is in the Office of Rural Health, not necessarily a statutory definition, which is why you make the reference as defined by the Office of Rural Health, because they, if I were...
By statute, I think they define it.
Okay.
The office...
That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Because there are varying...
Well, to take their they have a statutory authority to define it from a health perspective.
Right.
And that's what... The suggestion was to use rural as defined by the Office of Rural Health?
I don't know about this.
Good idea. Let's ask the LC on that one, too, huh? Thank you very much. Sorry to put you on the spot, Mr. Reese. Thank you. And if you guys have some opinions after you get to talk to each other, Mr. Riggs, you can speak to Representative Kotek. Thank you very much. The intention tomorrow would be to adopt 10 and 11. And what? And the bill. Which? Oh, yes. Yeah, in addition, HCR 100. Mm-hmm. The division? Ah, yes, indeed. We need another amendment. I'm sorry.
While we're at it.
The other amendment we need, which would be 12, I guess, is an amendment to line 38 of page 2 to add vision care to those services, mental health, you know, specialty care, mental health care, dental care, vision care, to that definition, which I don't think anybody has any problem with. Was probably
there was a request made to make sure that that was comprehensive to include vision.
Okay, so we'll have 10, 11, and 12 tomorrow.
Is there any other amendments that need to be discussed so that when we come tomorrow, we're only going to be dealing with these things that are coming in?
We've done the date. I think we've done, have we done everything else?
I believe so. 1 and 2 are taken care of. 9s are off the table. 3 is off the table. 4 we adopted yesterday. 5 was a date that's off the table because you passed the 6th today, and we adopted the 7th.
What's 8?
I have no idea what 8 is.
Oh, yeah. Does anybody know anything about a dash 8? The dash 7 and the dash 9, we haven't gotten a dash 8. Somebody got one in hiding somewhere?
And Mr. Chair and committee members,
springiness?
I will have a hand-engrossed bill tomorrow of the amendments that we have passed, so that you will have, at least up to this point, you'll have a complete read.
Could you have another one that hand engrosses with 10, 11, and 12? That would be something that we're going to adopt to.
If I can.
A separate one.
Yes, if I can get a sense of the language on 10, 11,
12.
On 10, 11, and 12. Yes, Mr. Chair. I can do that.
Well, I'm going to declare that dash 8s are dead.
Well.
They have to show up. We haven't heard from them by now. And nobody's willing to claim that orphan. That puppy's put to rest. Okay. Do you want to read this? Would you read this into the committee?
Oh, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just want to acknowledge that you have written testimony from the Oregonians for Health Security in support of HB 3614 that we will be entering into the record.
Thank you. Is there any other business to come before the committee?
Uh-huh.
Yes? Tomorrow. Public hearing on 100, and intention is to move it tomorrow. So we might, Sandy, tomorrow, Friday, is there going to be an evening meeting tomorrow?
No.
Tomorrow, can we have, if we run 15 minutes over something, will be anybody pushing us out? I'll really try to get us out as fast as we can.
I don't know. I believe that we do have pretty much a committee behind us every day. I do.
Even on Friday?
I think so. I can't swear to that, though, sir.
Incidentally,
I know there's one today.
Trading for the fact that we may need an extra 15 minutes tomorrow, I really would appreciate if you stay in case we do.
Could we start early?
Although maybe...
No.
No, there's a committee in here that always runs over.
Could we start the hearing today and do the 15 minutes today?
Is there somebody in here to testify for the wish to testify on HCR 100 today?
Nobody signed up. Sir.
Okay. Here's what I'll give you in return. In the last 2 weeks, we're going to plan to have informational hearings as frequently as we can, but we will not meet on Friday. And I mean, unless something extraordinary happens, because we'll have to have the Senate bills out. It'll be purely informational, and we'll try to take those Fridays off the rest.
The last type of session.
But, again, we've been getting some requests for informational meetings. They've been some very interesting ones. There's a request to look at treatment for severe head injury, which is going to be a huge problem, which is a huge problem with so many returning servicemen with serious head injuries. We've got a request to deal with... what are the others? We have 3 or 4 requests already.
We need to have an update on the prescription bulk purchasing program.
Right.
We're slated to have an update on Senate Bill 329, the Oregon Health Fund Board. We also have a request to have an informational from OHSU on clinical trials, the research and some of the issues around that. And
the one on Monday.
And then the one on Monday, and I can't.
And there's been a request on looking at how the implementation of the House bill that had deal with public complaints in the medical board. There's been a request from one of our colleagues to
ask the medical board to come in and talk to us about.
And we've talked in a couple of hearings about doing one on access to sexual assault and child abuse.
Oh, yes.
Medical examinations in rural areas.
And it's also both yourself and Representative Cannon mentioned the dependency coverage, insurance coverage for dependency issue, that if you needed an information, we could slot some time for that.
Maybe you could get a sort of list to us by...
And Mr. Chair?
You have enough to do for tomorrow.
While we're making the list, I'd like to add a follow-up on the licensing board issue.
Yeah, that's our main order of business, so we will continue
Department
some issues on the licensing board.
Nursing board?
On our whole... I mean, we need to ask what's the next couple of steps on what we're looking at with the health licensing board.
And other than Mara asked about if we were going to hear from the Board of Nursing.
With the new executive director?
Yeah, actually, I had a very interesting meeting with her, and I think you would enjoy... Let's schedule at least a couple of sessions on the question of health licensing boards and where we need to do them. I was hoping maybe two or three sessions on that. And one of them absolutely should include a report on my impression from meeting with her, and I think you'll be impressed, is that she really is trying to move in the right direction. But she acknowledges that it's a very big job to change organizational culture in an institution like that.
Mr. Chair?
Good. Yes.
And I've had a request from a constituent to... and I don't know if we have time given this list, but have a conversation again about restoring some of the dental coverage that was an Oregon Health Plan standard. Since we heard when the conversation we had around opening up the standard plan in terms of how many people we can cover, we've heard from some of the dental providers saying, can we revisit the fact that we only do extractions for the standard population now and no prevention? And do we indeed, can we revisit that? Do we have dollars to possibly restore that benefit?
Yeah, I would say in most of the hearings we're hearing, we should schedule two a day, so we can do two 45-minute hearings. And that, I mean, that really should give us, I think we have room to address whatever topics you all think we need to address. I think we have, at most, four bills coming over from the Senate. And it may not be four, and we may not get them all. But we've surveyed what might be coming over from the Senate, and I think four is probably the maximum number. So we should have time.
Mr. Chair, while we're making lists, and this probably wouldn't be a full hearing, but I'm very excited that in my community, in about 2 weeks, we have a free dental clinic that is opening up, that's serving all uncovered kids uncovered by dental in the entire Benton County area. It's a collaboration between local dentists and the Boys and Girls Club of Corvallis, where they're actually having the dental clinic in the Boys and Girls Club. They'll have bus service to bring the kids. It's been a great community effort.
And I see you went from Sable.
I don't know, but it's an amazing project. That
Okay. Yeah. No. I think it's gonna be very hard to get us back in the interim, and I expect that most will have three interim meetings. And included in my objective for the interim is to produce an omnibus piece of legislation about health licensing boards dealing with some of these issues. And I think the extent to which we can use the fact that we're all here is really advantageous. Let me just share with you where I think the issues, reiterate, where I think we were when we had our last meeting on the health licensing boards. I think our three sets of questions, each of which has some subsidiary questions. One is, who has oversight for health licensing boards? Second question is about the public's representation on health licensing boards. Is it really right when it's only two public members out of 11 or something like that? In fact, we ought to ask the question, and it should get an interesting hearing, is why aren't all health licensing boards have a majority of public members rather than professional members? That will wake up a lot of discussion. And the third set of issues around the impaired professional programs and what we can do to help integrate and standardize those programs. In fact, maybe create one or two programs, because all you remember they do is do oversight on how the professional is doing. They're not providing
the service itself. I can also report to you that I've been joining the public meetings of the Board of Radiology Techs, or whatever it's called, and they listen to us very carefully and are working very hard to get consensus on the creation of a new board of diagnostic imaging. They're working with all the parties. The OMA came in to talk to me today about that, and they've been talking to them, and I propose they may think of providing their own version of that bill, but it's been a very responsive reaction. They've had three public meetings. I think I've been at all of them, or I've been at two of the three. And I think we will have a bill that will have pretty wide consensus for the next session, for the changing of that board of radiology tech to a board of diagnostic imaging, which will be constituted in a way that can deal with sonographers and the other folks who are a part of a modern definition of what medical imaging is about, and will deal with a lot of knotty questions that they're dealing with in these hearings, like who do we grandfather, what do we do with national certification, the relationship between national certification and state licensing. And I think they're doing just a great job on trying to move us. I think they may need some help, and we'll give them that, but it's been, I think, the strongest reaction to our request of them that I've seen in dealing with the board in the past. Okay, I'll try again. Anything else come before the committee? We're adjourned. Thank you.